Okay, so last time we were looking at the basic component, well, discrete event simulations models. What were they and what were the basic components of the models? And the basic idea behind a discrete event model is that the state of the model is, or the state of the system is changing at discrete points. And what you need to represent is the sequence of state changes. We refer to the change of state as an event. We noted that there were a number of ways to look at these models and generate these models, and the one we have chosen to delve into is the event advance model. And the idea here is that well, you track time, but time advances from event occurrence to event occurrence to event occurrence. And so that's contrasted with time sort of ticking away at sort of regular intervals. So if we're going to represent our systems in this way, then the main component of our representation is an event list. And so this list contains all the possible future events, and if we order that, we get sort of a prediction of what's going to happen. Obviously, the event list changes upon occurrence of events, and what exactly that change is governed by the event logic. Now, the types of systems that we're looking at, what's really important for us are sort of factors of time. And while they're important to us, they're also random or not fully predictable. So we need timers to track the progress of time and the occurrence of the events. But at least in terms of event occurrence, this is happening according to some random distribution. And all we said about the random distributions last time was that you could, when you were sort of building, coding your simulator in Java or some other language, that you could use the random packages available in those languages to generate your random events. In particular, Java would have a random number generator. So you'd be able to distribute random numbers according to a uniform distribution. So what we're going to do this lecture is take a closer look at modeling the random factors within our simulation. So how do we generate random number sequences of numbers that appear to adhere to some random distribution? Okay, and the references for this lecture, again, the primary reference is Harry Peros, and Jerry Banks would have similar material. Okay. So, why are we doing this? We know we have randomness, and again, there's a lot of ways to, you want to define that randomness using some sort of probability distribution, so either a PDF or a CDF. And so typically you use sort of one of two methods or a combination of the two methods. So either you have an expert who has deep understanding of how of the system to be studied, and they know something about how the system behaves and how the randomness is organized, or you gather sample input data from a real life system, and then you use that to in some way generate a distribution. So you can imagine using a histogram to again give you sort of relative frequency within certain intervals. If you have a histogram, then it's not terribly hard to generate a CDF, which again produces a random variate with the same probability of landing in the given intervals. And you can either, again, you can use that, and you can use that CDF, or again, you could think about data fitting to some well-known distribution, and we'll see that well-known distributions often are defined to try to represent real-life, real-world systems and real-world behavior, and you can then use the samples that you've got, the data samples you have, to estimate the parameters of one of these well-known distributions. So we'll say a few words just about the distributions and their parameters, and then we'll look at how we generate our sequence of numbers that appears to be random, and then we'll talk a little bit about testing these sorts of sequences and convincing ourselves that they really do have these desirable random properties. Okay, so again, over time, distributions have been defined with specific behaviors in mind, and we'll just go through a quick list of these sorts of distributions. And talk a bit about estimating their parameters. Their parameters frequently are just averages and variances, or some function of average or variance. So you can use any observed data to come up with an estimate for these parameters. Okay, so what are some well-known distributions? Well, binomial and geometric, which work as a pair. So binomial, and these are discrete distributions, binomial models the number of successes in n trials, and geometric models the number of trials to achieve k successes. Okay, so there, you can see that they're paired, and they're paired in a similar way to the Poisson and exponential distribution. So, as we mentioned, Poisson models the number of independent events that occur in a fixed period of time, and exponential models the time between independent events. Okay, and again, we'll go more into the property of the sort of Poisson and exponential pair when we discuss queuing theory. The Erlang process models something which is the sum of several exponentially distributed processes. So if you have, say, sequential jobs you're doing, and you might think that the service of any job is exponential. So if you want the overall service time, that's the sum of a number of exponentials. Weibull models the time to failure for components, and the exponential is a special case of the Weibull distribution. Normal distributions model a process that can be thought of as the sum of a large number of component processes. And again, we don't, the sort of interesting thing about normal, which we'll see later, is that it doesn't matter what the underlying distribution of the components is, as long as there's enough of them. And similarly, log normal models the distribution of a product of a large number of component processes. Okay, so again, what you see with these distributions is that they have sort of very specific behaviors in mind. And if your system suits that, that's great. Other distributions seek more to give you a shape for your distribution. Okay, so typically sort of centering distributions around means. Okay. And so two of the most common are the gamma and beta distribution. And so gamma represents non-negative random variables, and beta represents bounded random variables. Okay, so with gamma, there's no upper limit to the values. With beta, there is. And what we can see is if depending on how we parameterize our gamma and beta distributions, we get different shaped curves. Okay. If you really don't know very much at all, you can go for a uniform distribution, and this is usually only used if we have absolutely no information about our data, or a slightly less basic version would be triangular, and so here you might know a minimum and a maximum value. And if the distribution is not sort of uniform, but rather sort of centered around our mean, then triangular might work better. And as we said before, if nothing looks like it particularly fits one of the sort of well-known distributions, we can always use the data that we collect to build up our distribution. So you know, use something like a histogram, and which gives us relative likelihood of occurrence within intervals, and you know, use that to build up something like a CDF. Okay. Now, as we saw for the gamma and beta distribution, these are parameterized, and depending on the parameters, you get different shaped curves. And this is true of most distributions. Okay, and so if we want to represent our data using a distribution, then we have to use our data to estimate parameters. And we see how this works for a few of our sort of better known distributions. So for Poisson, we have a PDF, and it's a function of alpha, which is the system expectation, which is the expectation. And we don't know what this is, but we can use the sample mean as an estimate of the system expectation. Similarly, for exponential, we can write down a PDF and then lambda is a parameter, and lambda is 1 over the mean, if we want to estimate that, we take 1 over the sample mean. Normal distribution is similar. It's a function of now expectation and variance, and so we take a sample mean and we can also use the sample the samples to estimate the variance. So you can essentially find the variance of the samples. We'll see that there's a slight hitch with that in making it what's called unbiased or a true representation of the system variance, but we will cover that next lecture. Okay, so we've said we want to, we've picked a distribution, we've either picked a just distribution or created a distribution, and now we need to generate values for our system that match that distribution. Okay, and so the question is, how do we do that? So if we're just generating a sequence of numbers, how do we ensure that it's matching a certain distribution? Okay, and usually this is a two-step process. In the first step, we will generate a sequence of uniformly distributed random numbers. So these are called pseudo-random numbers because the pseudo refers to the fact that we're actually generating them. But they will ostensibly look like they are drawn from this uniform distribution. Okay. So what we want these sequences to have is, they should look like they're uniformly distributed, and we should have some degree of statistical independence in that we don't want to be able to predict what's coming just from having observed the history of the system. Okay. And so one of the sort of simplest requirements that must be met then is that your sequence can't be repeating. For all the things we generate, there will come some point where it repeats, but we want that to happen after sort of a desired length of time. And so hopefully when we're generating our sequences, we never reach the point where we're repeating. Okay. Now, if a sequence is truly random, then there will be no repetition. If we generate the sequence, then if we use the same method to generate the sequence over and over again, we will get the same results. And yeah, if you're trying to compare multiple systems, then this can actually be a desirable property. Once we have generated our random numbers, so our a sequence of numbers which is uniform between 0 and 1, then we can use this sequence of random numbers to create a sequence of what we call random variates, a sequence that appears to be distributed according to some alternate distribution. Okay. And one of the most common techniques is to use the cumulative distribution function to do this. Now, this is good if, and the technique you use is you invert the cumulative distribution function. And so as long as that's possible, so as long as you can write down a CDF and as long as you can invert it, that's the most straightforward way of generating your random variates. If not, frequently you can use what you know about the distribution to sort of construct the random variates. Again, based on your random numbers. So, we'll start by looking at how we generate random numbers. And as I said before, these are called pseudo-random number sequences, because we're generating them, and so if we generate them in the same fashion, we will be able to reproduce the numbers we generate. Okay, so ultimately, what we want are random numbers, which are a sequence of numbers that appear to be distributed uniform between 0 and 1. We'll then use that sequence of random numbers to generate random variates, which will appear to have some other distribution. Okay, so the way random numbers are generated, typically, sort of using computers or even pen and paper, is that we have some sort of function that is dependent, that generates the numbers and is dependent on an initial condition, and we refer to the initial condition as a seed. If the same seed is used, then the same sequence of numbers is generated. Okay. And this is in contrast to, again, having a truly random sequence, such as we could have, we could base our numbers on observations of natural phenomena, something like the radioactive half-life. Okay. And again, if we observe natural phenomena, then there's no predicting or reproducing any specific result. So there's a number of algorithms for producing pseudo-random numbers. And we're just going to look at the sort of simplest of these, which is the congruential generators. These can be the sort of built up and combined to make more complicated generators, and possibly with better properties. So we evaluate our generators according to how closely the sequences mimic truly random behavior. Now, again, this is sort of the theory behind random numbers, and it's what would be implemented. But within Java, you would have random classes that would, or a random class that would allow you to just generate the numbers without having to code exactly how they're generated. So you just call the class and it'll give you a random number. And for other languages, there'd be libraries available as well. Okay. So random numbers, again, we're referring to sequences which appear to be distributed uniformly over 0, 1. And so that has a quite straightforward PDF. So it's 1 over 0, 1, and 0 otherwise. And you could work out that the expectation is a half and the variance is 1/12. Now, there would be a number of properties that we would want for these variables, and which indeed you would expect them to adhere to. So if the interval 0, 1 is divided into n sub-intervals of equal length, we expect the number of observations in each subinterval to be n over n, where n is the total number of observations. So you'd expect, on average, that you'd have an equal number of samples in each subinterval. We would also expect that the probability of observing a value in a particular interval to be independent of the previous value drawn. So you don't want them sort of always going up or having some discernible pattern. The simplest way to generate a sequence of random numbers is the congruential method. And we'll just look at, and we'll just define what this congruential method is and look at an example so we get a feel for its use. So again, you have a seed or a starting point, and then the congruential method generates the sequence recursively using the following formula. So x, the next value is a the previous value plus c, and that quantity mod M. Okay. You can use more general formulae, but you and then but it's always you always take it modulo some number M. Okay. In this case, the numbers you generate are going to be between 0 and m minus 1, but to get into the range of 0 to 1, we just divide the numbers we generate by m. Okay, and so it's not true that all values that we choose will produce acceptably random results. We'll look at an example. We have a very simple example, and it's good because we can see how the generator works, but it would not be useful in generating results because you would not plausibly believe that they were random. Okay, so in general, there are values that are proven to work well, which you do not have to test yourself. And so we have an example here of one that generates in a range between 0 and 2 to the 32nd, and again, it has been shown to have acceptable properties in the sequences generated. Okay, so that's the values there are in the hundreds of millions. We're just going to look at a simple example where the values are in single digits. And so we see our generator function here gives as A equals C equals 7 and M equals 10. We use our initial condition, our seed, so we pick here x0 is 0. Okay, so plugging in 0, we get x1 that is 7 mod 10, which is 7. And so then plugging in 7, we get 56 mod, we get x2 is 56 mod m, which is 6. Plug in 6 and we get 49. X3 is 49 mod M, which is 9. And plugging in 9, then we get 70 mod M, which is 0. Now, once we're back to a number we had before, well, your sequence is going to repeat itself. So once you've hit 0, that will be followed by 7, 6, 9, etc. So, again, we see that we get some idea of how it works, but we see that this actually gives us a very short sequence of numbers, after which it repeats itself. So we would not, in general, consider this to be acceptably random. You would not, if this sequence went on for any length of time, after a while you'd be saying, oh yeah, well, I know exactly what the next number to arise will be, and that's not what we're looking for. Okay, now, again, the bigger you make AC and M, the longer your sequence will be before repetition. So, in general, our generators have a number of properties. So the sequence generated is always periodic with a period of at most m. Well, that makes sense. If you run through all the numbers between 0 and m, then obviously eventually you're going to repeat a number. Once you repeat a number, the sequence starts over again. There's no guarantee that the period that we arrive at is actually m. For our simple example, well, m is 10, but we do not get a period of 10. We get a period of 4. Okay. So in order to ensure that we reach our maximum period, M and C must have no common divisors. For any prime factor of M, A mod that factor has to be 1, and A mod 4 must be 1 if M is a multiple of 4. And for our example, the second condition doesn't hold. So, for instance, 5 is a factor, so A mod 5 would, or 7 mod 5 would be 2, not 1. Okay. So, again, there are known values that will give you good properties for randomness. And a lot of work has been done in building a, in defining generators which have sort of greater length, greater periods, or more more random, more seemingly random distributions. Harry Peros does discuss a number of these options, but again, I just wanted to give you some small idea of where these, where random number generators arise from. Typically, there's going to be a trade-off between complexity and suitability. And so what you would hope is the more complex your generator is, the longer the period you get, the better the properties you get. But if you're not careful, you can create something that's more complex and actually less suitable. Okay. Generally, again, you will be using random number generators which have already been tested and found suitable. It's no harm in any case to do your own testing. We'll discuss this later, but you might be surprised if, you know, if you're relying on somebody else's work, then you might be surprised if, you know, it doesn't actually have the properties that you would expect. Okay, so that gives us a method of generating random numbers, what we call random numbers, so sequences of numbers between 0 and 1 that have these desirable properties. And so, as we've said, a lot of times what we're seeking to model does not have a uniform distribution. So the question then becomes, how do we generate sequences of number sequences that look like they adhere to some other distribution? And what we'll see is we can take our sequence of random numbers and we can modify them to adhere to look like they adhere to different distributions. Okay. The simplest way to do this is to convert the sequence, is to use what's called the inverse transform technique. And the inverse transform technique relies on inverting our cumulative distribution function. Okay. So we're going to denote our random numbers using R, and our desired random variate using X. So we assume we know the density function of the variable we wish to generate, and we denote that as fx as usual, so that's just the probability that, and it should be that large x is less than little x, so that should be inverted. So the big x and the little x need to switch places there. I'll correct that before I post the notes. Okay, now R is is uniformly distributed over 0, 1. And what we do is we let F sub x equal R, or x equals F inverse of R. So we get X, our random variate, by applying the inverse of the cumulative density function. So what we need to do is convince ourselves that if X is given by the inverse of is given by F inverse of R, and where R is uniformly distributed, then indeed F of X the probability that X is less than little x is indeed f of x. Okay, so if we think about it, if we fix our x, then what we want to do is, again, what's the probability that big X is less than little x? And that's going to be the probability that a uniform random variable is less than f of x. So we can see that sort of by examining the graph below. And now R is uniformly distributed, so the probability that R is less than any given value is just that value. Okay, so in that way we can see that we are indeed generating our variates with the appropriate distribution. So we'll again look at an example. We can try to generate random variables with an exponential distribution. And so f of x is 1 minus e to the minus lambda x. And so what we now want to solve for x, which is equivalent with, which means take the inverse to extract the inverse function to extract x. And so we just do a bit of manipulation, move r to one side, e to the other, take the natural log, and then divide by minus lambda. And we get that x equals minus 1 over lambda, natural log 1 minus r. Now, we can tidy it up a little and say that it's equivalent to natural log r. And we can do that just because 1 minus r is also uniformly distributed between 0 and 1. Okay. So you'll probably need, if you need to generate exponential random variates in your assignment, then you will start by finding the, or you can generate uniform random variables using the random class, but they don't explicitly define exponential, but you can generate them using this inverse transform technique. Okay, well, to look at another example, if we have a uniform distribution, but not between 0 and 1, but between A and B, then generally the PDF has the form f of x equals 1 over b minus a less than or equal to x less than or equal to b, and we can find the CDF by taking the integral from, A to X. We can invert, and then if we wish to generate random variates, we just take the inverse transform of our CDF. And again, that should be we should have a large F here. But we can take the inverse transform to generate our random variates. Okay, so again, if the CDF exists and is invertible, then this is the easiest way to generate our random variates. In some cases, either the CDF does not exist or it's complicated or impossible to invert it, and in that case you usually have to use some constructive method to generate your random variates. So generate something you know and then use that to construct what you're looking for. So for example, the Erlang K distribution is the sum of K exponential random variables, and so as I said, this is the time it takes to do a series of jobs where the time for one job is exponentially distributed. So the easiest way to produce variates of this is to generate k exponentially distributed variates and sum them. So, sort of a direct construction from something we know. if you have the normal distribution, again, this is the sum of a large number of independent processes, then there's no closed form CDF possible, so we have to use some other technique to generate our variates. Okay. And so, we use what's called the central limit theorem to generate our random variates. Okay, so before we go on to discuss that, it's always possible to normalize, to adjust the normal distribution according to mean and variance to produce a distribution of that's normal with zero mean and a variance of one. You just again, you subtract off the mean and divide by the variance. Okay. So, what we observed that the normal distribution is the sum of a large number of independent and identically distributed random variables. Okay, and so if each with a mean of mu and a variance, each with the same mean and variance, if we take the sum, then it approaches the normal distribution. The expectation of the sum is just going to be, if you're summing k of these, then the expectation is k times mu, and similarly the variance is k times sigma squared. Okay. So we can sum any type, any distribution, and we will if we sum together enough of them, we end up with something that looks normal. Okay, so we have our random numbers, which are distributed uniform 0, 1. We know what the expectation and variance are. So if we sum up together enough of them, then we get something that's normal. The expectation is k times the expectation of an individual one. The variance is k times the variance for an individual one. Okay. Now, by adjusting for mean and variance, we can produce something that is normal 0, 1. Okay, so we had our original number, our original x that was normal mu sigma squared, and we adjusted x to be normal 0, 1, and we now have a second quantity, which we constructed, which we also know is normal 0, 1. So now, to arrive at values for x, all we have to do is set those two quantities equal to each other and solve for x. Okay. So we get the sum of our uniform, sum of our random numbers, minus k over 2, divided by square root of k over 12, equals x minus mu over sigma. And we can solve for x. And we have thus, again, constructed x using a now large number of uniform random numbers. So the Poisson process is another one that is easier to construct in a constructive fashion. And again, we do this by knowing what the Poisson process is modeling. So it's modeling the number of occurrences of an event over a period of time. But we also know that the time between any two successive occurrences of events is distributed exponentially, okay, where the two distributions are related by lambda. So lambda is the number average number of occurrences, so the mean, and the exponential is 1 over lambda. Okay, we know how to generate exponential variates with, you know, a specific mean, and to generate n, you just sum the variates until they exceed about 1 or whatever time period you're looking for. Okay, and that's going to give you the number of occurrences according to a Poisson distribution. So finally, in some cases, we might want to model the distribution of actual data. And so we can consider the case of discrete and continuous variables, random variables separately. So in the first case, we have discrete random variables and therefore a probability mass function. And so we want all of the probability to rest at sort of distinct points, in this case integers. So the probability that x equals I is, we're given that the probability of x equals I is pi. And we let capital Pi be the probability that x is less than or equal to I. Then we can choose x. We can generate x from R by seeing what interval R falls into. And so if R is between pi and pi minus 1, then we say that x equals I. And we can see that the probability that x equals I then is going to be capital P I minus capital P I minus 1. Okay, so in our example, R falls between P2 and P1, so we say x equals 2. and the probability that x equals 2 is the probability that r is in the interval between p2 and p1, which is what we would want. For continuous distributions, we'll have to approximate. If we have samples, and so we have to approximate our distribution. We now don't know what our distribution is, so we can approximate it using a histogram. If you divide your data range into sub data intervals into sub intervals, you can sort of see how many occurrences of the data are within any sub interval to give you again a histogram, and then we can use that to generate a likelihood of being in any of those subintervals. Okay, so fx1 is the likelihood of being in the subinterval between x1 and x2. This will give us sort of a piecewise linear CDF, and once you have your piecewise linear CDF, you can just use your inversion technique to or inverse transform technique to generate your random variables as before. Okay, so that gives us some idea of how we can model the randomness within our system. And the next question we would like to answer, and the final question for this lecture, is how can we assure ourselves that the sequences we've generated actually do look sufficiently random? Okay, so we have this idea of sort of goodness of fit. Okay, and so we'll examine this question sort of in two stages. First, we'll look at what we can say about our sequence of random numbers. So our sequence that we believe should be uniform 0, 1, which underlies a lot of our distributions. And then we'll see that we can broaden out the techniques we use for that to examine other distributions as well. And so we want to see sort of how good a match are the numbers we're generating for what we expect. So we'll take that up in the second half of this lecture.